Good morning, everyone. Every week we come here and we gather here and we celebrate God and we proclaim how great He is. And yet every week we come in here with the pain of the prior week still bearing deep in our hearts. And each week we go through, we are reminded of this reality that we've been going through over the past couple weeks, that we live in a world that is east of Eden. Eden was the representation of God's most holy place. What life was supposed to be like extending over all the earth. That was Adam and Eve's decree as priests in the garden. But we saw that first week that the fall, that it wasn't just the fact that they ate this forbidden fruit. It was the fact that when you break God's hierarchy, when you break the order of creation, that it ushers in chaos. And we see this not only on a cosmic scale, we see this also in our own lives. When we step outside of the bounds that God places in our lives, chaos is ushered in. Last week, Chris kind of continued this, and we see that there's this progression of humanity moving away from Eden, where it's not only just Adam and Eve partaking of the forbidden fruit, but you have Cain, out of his envy, murdering his brother. So it not only extends from individual choices, but now to family choices. And now we're looking at Noah. And I think we did, oftentimes, and at least I'll speak for me, we don't oftentimes take the story of Noah very seriously because it's oftentimes equated with a children's story, isn't it? I mean, that's what you teach the kids on Sunday school, and it's about rainbows, and it's about two by two, and we sing. The Bible camp we go to, man, they love that song, Arky Arky. And, I mean, it's got 10,000 verses. God told Noah to build him an Arky Arky. And so, you know, we sing all those songs, and it's such a cheery and peppy kind of song. And I don't know, and there's nothing wrong with any of those things, but I don't know that we take the story of Noah seriously. Because when we get to Noah, we see that it's not only just individual chaos. It's not only just familial chaos. Now it's extended to societal chaos. And so when we think about the flood, we oftentimes get this image in our head. This is what we oftentimes portray it as, right? They step off the ark, everybody's smiling, which I'm sure they were in some ways, man. I'm glad to be off that boat. We're driving each other crazy. You know, the animals are driving me crazy. No, all kidding aside, you know, we have this picture in our minds of everybody stepping off the boat and things are just wonderful and it's all rainbows and everything. And, you know, I almost didn't preach this Sunday just because of all the hurricanes that have been going on. Because I think with all the hurricanes that have happened, you see the aftermath of that. And you have a very real sense of this world that we live in, of this life east of Eden. I mean, those people who are in those zones right now, they're just standing there like, what's next? What's next? Where do we go to rebuild our life? And so I have an image coming up next that kind of is probably more realistic of what it looked like when they got off that boat. I mean, if you're talking about a cataclysmic flood, right, that's supposed to wipe out all of humanity, that's supposed to wipe out all of the land animals. I mean, we're talking about societies here, right? Now, I mean, these aren't the New York cities of today, or maybe Tokyo's of today, or those kinds of places. But nonetheless, I mean, these were villages. These were homes, and these were people. And so if you've ever seen the aftermath of a cataclysmic flood, or a hurricane, or a tsunami, you see what's left after. And I have to imagine that when they stepped off that boat, yes, it was rainbows and animals coming off two by two. But there's a very real sense of what is next. You know, where do we go from here to rebuild this thing? Now, what's really fascinating, and let's turn to Genesis chapter 6, because this is where we have the story begins. I want to kind of go back and look at some details of what is happening here. You start to see that there is, and I'm not going to go through everything, but you start to see that there's this progression to humanity. There's the systemic immorality that has taken place. And there's some obscure language, some obscure stories that would be great for personal discussion, but we just don't have the time to get into this morning, such as what were the Nephilim or, you know, what all that means. But what we do see is that in verse 5 of chapter 6, the Lord saw that the wickedness of man was continually great in the earth, and that every intention of the thoughts of his heart was only evil continually. And the Lord regretted that he had made man on the earth, and it grieved him to his heart. And so we don't really know a whole lot about God at this point, right? I mean, if you're just reading this, now we do, we're Christians, we've been studying this book our entire lives. But if you're coming to this with a clean slate and you're looking, you're trying to understand who God is and how God's revealing himself and what's taking place. And so we know that God's a creator. We know that God also establishes boundaries. And we also know that this triune God has intention for humanity. And this intention that comes out of the love that he's poured out in his creating. But we see here that even after the sending of Cain east of Eden, this curse that was put on Cain, that the fall and the curse that resulted from that was deep, right? I mean, it was deep. Its effects are not easily dispelled. And I think it's significant here that it says that it grieved him to his heart. I mean, you who have children that are older, I mean, have they ever done something that disappointed you so much that it grieved you to your heart? Or have you ever created something and you were so proud of this creation and you spent so much time and invested so much joy into this creation, whatever it is, and then someone come along and just completely wrecked it or criticized it to the point to where it grieved you deeply? I mean, I have to imagine what it was like for God here to look at his creation that came out of his abundant joy now in such chaos and misery. I think it's telling of God and his character that I don't believe this was something that he embarked on haphazardly. This was the only choice that God had to make. But as Chris mentioned last week, and we've been talking about, every judgment of God is tempered also by his mercy. Again, God had the opportunity to wipe it all away completely, right? To do completely away with mankind. I used that example 2 weeks ago of the Play-Doh man, right? I mean, if you created Play-Doh man and a little Play-Doh village, and all of a sudden that little Play-Doh man started fighting, you know, they're fighting with each other and they're tearing down their little Play-Doh village and they start yelling back at you. What are you going to do? Wad Play-Doh up, put it right back in the tube and say, I'm never doing that again, right? Well, God had opportunity to do that, but he didn't do it completely. But what is really fascinating here is that everything in the way that God established the created order is now unraveling because of the chaos. So let's look at what I'm talking about. On day one, we saw in Genesis 1 that God's spirit, or also breath, hovered above the waters. Here in Genesis 8-9, the wind blew over the waters after the deluge happened, right? So it had not rained on the earth. The waters were separated by the spirit at the beginning. Now, they came back together to cause chaos. On day two, God separated the waters. And waters in Genesis 8 and 9, the waters from above and the waters from below came together again, right? So it said that the water burst forth from the ground and it started to rain because there wasn't any rainfall in those days. Day three, dry land appeared. What's interesting in Genesis 8 and 9 is that the water starts to recede and the land appeared. And we're talking about when Noah and the animals were on the ark. You're starting to see that there's this pattern here that the way God created everything to work and his beauty and his order is now starting to come unraveled because of humanity's wickedness. Our actions not only affect us, our actions not only affect one another, but our actions also affect all of creation. And that's sort of an interesting concept that I don't think we've spent enough time with. What is the outcome of what we do here on earth. How we treat each other. How we respond to God. And so, you know, God told Noah to build the ark, to put the animals on, and then all the rest were going to be flooded. And we see in Genesis 7 that this is what's taking place. And so it rained for 40 days and nights, and then the flood water swelled for 150 days. As we know, after flooding, the waters will oftentimes swell after the fact of the rain. We see this happening here. And it says that everything, this is in chapter 7, verse 23, everything on the dry land in whose nostrils was the breath of life died. He brought out every living thing that was on the face of the ground, man and animals and creeping things and birds of the heavens. They were blotted out from the earth. Only Noah was left and those who were with him in the ark. And the waters prevailed on the earth 150 days. I can't imagine the grief that was in God's heart to have to go through such a devastating act to restore creation. But what's really interesting here is that Noah's Ark marks a shift in how God deals with his creation. Okay? It marks a shift. Prior to, it was just banishment, right? You have God kicking Adam and Eve out of the garden, right? You have God kicking Cain out of wherever he was and going east to the land of Nod. But here, there's a shift in how God deals with humanity. It was so corrupt, it was so wicked, that he only had one option. And he decreated it. Okay? He decreated it. You can go back one, Wes. But out of this decreation comes renewal, right? So we see that there's sort of this pattern to it of where lights to give light, the windows open. We see that the birds were to fly above the earth, right, on day five of creation. We have Noah sending out the birds to survey the earth over the waters. Day six, land animals and humans appear in creation. After the flood, after the land was dry, Noah and his family, the animals and the people, went out. And what you have here is God is decreating everything and then recreating it, or we might call it new creation. And this marks a new paradigm, a new way that God is dealing with humanity. And this will become the way that God deals with creation even until our own time. Not a cataclysmic flood, but there will be exile, there will be a decreation, and then a new creation. But there's a difference here. And we've talked about the justice of God, and we've talked about how God's judgment is tempered by his mercies. But here we have straight from God's mouth how he's doing this. On day seven of creation, we see God had a Sabbath. And that's God came and inhabited his creation and dwelled with them. Here, after they had come out, God makes a covenant with Noah. What's really interesting is in ancient times, when someone would make a covenant, generally it was a king or someone with tremendous privilege and power making it with someone lesser, right? And the lesser was the one who was making the covenant. King, I will never disobey you again. King, I will uphold these statutes. King, I will do these things. But in Noah's story, it's the reverse of that. God is the one that's taking all the risk. God is the one who's putting boundaries upon himself. Let's read. So, in verse 20, then Noah built an altar to the Lord and took some of every clean animal and some of every clean bird and offered burnt offerings on the altar. And when the Lord smelled the pleasing aroma, the Lord said in his heart, I will never again curse the ground because of man, for the intention of man's heart is evil from his youth. Neither will I ever again strike down every living creature as I have done. While the earth remains, seed time and harvest, cold and heat, summer and winter, day and night shall not cease. And God blessed Noah and his sons and said to them, be fruitful and multiply and fill the earth. This is the same thing we heard God say to the original people, right? He is recreating. This language is the exact same as in the beginning of Genesis. But he gives some caveats. He realizes the wickedness within humanity. But he doesn't give a lot of commands, but he does give one. Think deeply about how you respond and treat each other and animals, right? See, now humanity is allowed to eat animals, but he's telling him, do not eat it with the lifeblood in it. Do not take the lifeblood of someone else. And I have to believe that that's what was increasing greatly on the earth. That what pained God deep to his heart is how we treated each other, God's image bearers. But if we continue in verse 8, then God said, this is chapter 9, verse 8, then God said to Noah and to his sons with him, behold, I establish my covenant with you and your offspring after you, and with every living creature that is with you, the birds, the livestock, and every beast of the earth with you, as many as came out of the ark. It is for every beast of the earth. I establish my covenant with you that never again shall all flesh be cut off by the waters of the flood. Never again shall there be a flood to destroy the earth. And God said, this is the sign of the covenant that I make between me and you and every living creature that is with you for all future generations. I have set my bow in the cloud, and it shall be a sign of the covenant between me and the earth. When I bring clouds over the earth and the bow is seen in the clouds, I will remember my covenant that is between me and you and every living creature of all flesh. And the waters shall never again become a flood to destroy all flesh. When the bow is in the clouds, I will see it and remember the everlasting covenant between God and every living creature of all flesh that is on the earth. God said to Noah, this is a sign of the covenant that I have established between me and all flesh that is on the earth. What's different about how God deals with his creation at this time is that God's saying, look, I realize the nature of humanity due to a curse. And even though I realize this nature, I'm going to put boundaries on what I will do in terms of responding to their nature. I'll never again flood the entire earth. In fact, I'll set my bow in the clouds. And we oftentimes think of rainbow, and I'm sure that's what it is. But what was a bow used for in ancient times? War. So while it could be the rainbow, and most certainly it is, it could also be that God will never bring this kind of judgment on the earth again. He's setting his bow, his weapon of war, in the clouds. Now, I won't do this anymore because of how deeply it pained God's heart. And so not only do you see a progression in humanity, you see also a progression in how God is dealing with that humanity. Because not only is it about his judgment, but most importantly, he comes in with covenant. And he doesn't just make that covenant with people, right? He makes it with all the animals. For you, your family, all the animals that were with you, to all future generations. All of creation has a part in God's plan. And some of you here this morning, you can skip on past that one. Some of you here this morning are probably sitting here wrestling with this. I'll admit, I do too. This is a tough thing to teach, right? It's a tough thing to wrestle with this story and to think that God would ever do something like that. But sin is a break in order and always leads to disorder, right? It always leads to annihilation. It always leads to chaos. And so humanity, because of their wickedness, had chose this path. And God allowed the logical outcome of the path that humanity was choosing to take place. In our lives, we have a choice every day. We have a choice whether to choose God's path, whether to choose the way of love, right? I mean, a lot's happened since the flood story, right? A lot has happened in how God deals with humanity and what Jesus Christ came and taught us about God and what to do. There's a different humanity now than there was then. And we know that God calls us to live with love. And that was his concern then too, to have justice, to have a proper way that we treat creation, that we treat the image of God in the other. That through this story, we see that it pained God deeply because of the wickedness in the world. And when we look around us, we still live with this very real sense that we're east of Eden. And you have to wonder, is it still paining God's heart that his creation would be at such odds with one another? That we could be at odds with one another. When we think about this story, we have to realize that God calls us to live with love, that God calls us to love our neighbor as ourself, and that when we do that, we are taking part in restoring this creation. But when we are at odds with one another, when we are angry with one another, when we are fighting against one another, that we're taking part in this decreation, that we're disordered. And that's apart from God's will. Look in your life right now and say, is there any part that I can tell that I'm living outside of God's order? I'm living outside of the way that He wants me to live. And it's only ushering more chaos into my life. You know, interesting thing is we talked about new creation. Paul told us in 2 Corinthians 5 that if anyone is in Christ, behold, he is a new creation. We are covenantal children. And we are in a loving relationship with our Father. And this morning, if you are not in that loving relationship with God, or if you're wrestling with this and saying, you know, I too wrestle with the wickedness of humanity, and I need strength to know how to pray or how to help these situations that are in our world, then God calls you as we stand and as we sing.